Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, everyone. My name is Stephen Gilson with WebSphere eSupport, and this is the IBM Time Zone Update Utility for Java Education session. Today's speakers are John Stainforth and Toby Corbin, both of whom are members of the Java team in Hursley, UK. And so, without further ado, I'm turning it over to you, John.
Thanks, Stephen. Welcome, everybody. By way of introduction, this session is all about what we're doing to prevent customers from hitting problems when the clocks in North America change 3 weeks early in March of next year. Now, we don't have too many weeks left before this actually happens, and we do have a major communications exercise in progress, first of all, externally, outside IBM, to make sure that our customers are taking all the right steps, and also internally inside IBM, so that everyone understands what the issue is and what we're doing about it. So if I can start with chart 2, which is headed Agenda, I'll first of all tell you what the changes are, what preventive measures are needed for Java, and explain why we've created a time zone update utility. Then I'll hand over to Toby to take you through what the utility does and how it works. Moving on to chart number 3, this diagram shows what's happening with the dates. And as part of the US government's energy saving measures, they've extended the bandwidth of the DST period next year 3 weeks forwards in March and 1 week backward in November. So it's going to start on the 11th of March and finish on the 4th of November. And it's not just in the United States where this is happening. Canada and Bermuda have decided to move in step, and it's just possible still that one or two other countries in North America might still decide to change their dates to follow suit. Moving on to chart 4, this explains the effects on software. And what happens when the DST dates are hard-coded into operating systems and Java software? Well, if they don't contain the new dates for 2007, they're going to need changing. And so are any vendor packages or customer-written applications if they still contain the old dates. And without the date changes, any applications that rely on these dates are likely to have their times out by an hour during the 3 week period from the 11th to the 31st of March, and again for the extra week up to the 4th of November. So those applications that are going to be vulnerable are those that do calendaring or scheduling functions. Think about Lotus Notes, for example, and if they use date stamps and time stamps, or if they do any kind of date or time processing. And the other point to make here is that it's not just systems located in North America that could be affected. With global networks and cross-border trading, if there are systems running in other countries that connect with time zones in North America, our customers are going to have to assess them for any exposures during those critical 4 weeks next year. And by the way, just in case anyone suggests that this is an IBM problem, remember that all the software that does this kind of processing is going to be impacted. So it's really an industry-wide issue, and it's relevant to all software vendors in the industry, including Sun, and to their customers. So next, a couple of additional thoughts. These aren't on the chart. First, for those of you who remember the year 2000, well, it's definitely not an action replay of what happened in year 2000. This is very much on a smaller scale, and many people won't be impacted by it at all. But it is still a kind of ticking time bomb, and it's one that we need to make sure gets defused well before the 11th of March. But on the other hand, just to put this in context, a similar change happened in Australia about 8 months ago, when the summertime there was extended by 1 week for the Commonwealth Games. And during that week, we had around 200 customer PMRs when software clocks and time calculations were out of step by an hour. And also, nothing to do with time zones, some of you might have been involved in a situation in May when the JCE security certificates expired with very little warning. And the customer impact of that was very severe indeed, and the numbers of PMRs that time ran into thousands rather than hundreds. So with both of those two rather negative experiences just behind us, we're very keen to make the changeover next March a painless and trouble-free experience, both for our customers and for those of you in the support teams. So let's move on to chart number 5. Homing in now on the Java aspects of this, it's going to be necessary for our customers to assess whether or not their Java applications are going to be impacted. And if they are impacted, they'll have to apply preventive service to their Java SDKs and JREs. And because Java's embedded in about 200 IBM products, this is a very pervasive situation. Java exists in a very wide variety of customer environments and middleware products and vendor packages and customer applications. And when you start to look at the permutations and combinations of multiple platforms and different releases and different installed service levels, then that number gets to be enormous. And in fact, there are just too many combinations for us to be able to deliver DST fixes for all of those through the normal service processes. So we are working with the product teams with a very strong recommendation to make sure that they're on one of the three standard supported releases, and that really means Java 1.3.1 or 1.4.2 or 5.0, and very specifically to get onto the latest possible service refresh level of these releases. Moving on to chart number 6, looking now at the picture from the point of view of the customer, one of the challenges they're up against is needing a long lead time to plan for the upgrade, to make it happen, to do the right amount of testing, and sometimes that's across hundreds or possibly even thousands of server systems. And customers tend to be very reluctant to run the risk of destabilizing systems that don't need fixing, and as a result of that, they've often become seriously behind in terms of levels of service currency. And now, all of a sudden, there's some major catching up to be done. Another thread here is that we do have customers with very specific Java patches on their systems, and sometimes they're local to just one customer only. And these so-called iFixes could be on very back-level systems, and that's another category of Java users to consider, and we need to be able to resolve. And one of the major constraints that we face here when it comes to applying service to Java is that the only method really available is the complete replacement of the JRE or the SDK. And that's what happens with any of the regular Java service refreshes, and that's also what happens when a product that's embedding Java upgrades the level of Java in one of its own fix packs. And there are a few further complications on the Sun Solaris and the HP UX platforms, because Sun and HP's view is that Java 1.3.1 is virtually at the end of its service lifetime, and Java 1.4.1 is out of support altogether. And that creates difficulties in upgrading or rebuilding IBM middleware products that embed Java on Solaris and HP UX. And another factor here is that when we talk about the US daylight savings changing, there's another wave of changes to time zones needed for Canada and more still for Bermuda. Those two countries have made a definite decision to change in step with the US, and it's still possible one or two smaller countries might still decide to change. So the point here is that we are dealing with something of a moving target when it comes to deciding which particular set of time zone fixes to include in our products. And it's not just in North America where the time zone changes are taking place. These time zone tables seem to be changing every other week for one reason or another. And I ought to mention two instances of this just coming on stream. One for Brazil, where the start date for their DST has just moved by 2 weeks and there are changes next February. And also there's a major change expected for Western Australia on the 3rd of December, where they're about to start doing their DST there for the very first time. Stepping on to chart 7 next, this summarizes the service fix strategy. And when it comes to delivering DST upgrades, there are really two main scenarios to consider. First of all, when Java is shipped as a component of a middleware product, and second, when Java is shipped standalone. So for middleware products that embed a JRE or an SDK, the preferred action there is for the product to deliver a set of customer fix packs containing a Java service refresh that's DST enabled. And for the standalone shipments on ZOS and AIX and Linux platforms, we are providing DST-enabled Java service refreshes via IBM DeveloperWorks, which is the usual way that customers get these SDKs. Now, a very important point to highlight here is that we're only producing DST-enabled Java service refreshes for the three main supported releases of Java only, and that's 1.3.1, 1.4.2, and 5.0. And just to establish clearly what our definition of DST-enabled is, that means the baseline set that contain both the US fix and the Canada fix. And in terms of our service refreshes, that's Java 1.3.1 SR10 with the iFix for distributed platforms. For ZOS, it's 1.3.1 SR27. And for 1.4.2, it's SR6. And for 5.0, it's SR3. And if you need information about later service refreshes with time zone adjustments for other countries, the place to find that is in the Guidance for Products document on the intranet at the UL mentioned here. Moving on to chart 8, and this is continuing on the theme of the service fix strategy, we need to also make it clear that we're not going to be providing any iFixes for customers to patch back-level service refreshes, either on the three main supported releases or any of the unsupported releases. And from a product point of view, in order to publicize to our customers what all the IBM products are doing by way of upgrading their products, there is now an IBM Support Alerts web page set up, and this contains the links to around 100 product flashes and tech notes, and that website is really a one-stop shop for DST information, and it's the essential source of reference for customers to find out how to upgrade their systems. And that URL is mentioned in a set at the end of the presentation. Okay, so I've explained what we're doing for the three main supported releases, and I've also said what we're not doing in terms of other Java releases and back-level service refreshes. So to cater for those situations where customers do need an update mechanism, let me now introduce the subject of the time zone update utility. And moving on to chart number 9. I've headed this alternative solution, the time zone update utility, and it's really positioned as a secondary mechanism to deal with those situations not addressed by service refreshes, and it's there to meet the needs of customers with products that are not supplying DST-enabled fix packs, and it's also there for customers for whom applying fix packs might be impractical or too high risk for their environments. And the way this utility works is that the customer runs it against their installed Java directories, and it just patches the time zone data within the SDK or JRE. And there's a definite advantage here because it completely avoids the need for a total replacement of the SDK or JRE, and it provides the flexibility to keep the time zone information right up to date, compared with service refreshes that only tend to come along every 3 or 4 months. With the time zones changing every 2 weeks or so, there are definite benefits for those customers who actually need to keep this kind of information on their systems right up to date. So the way that we're making available the utility is to deliver it packaged up with the latest version of the time zone tables and to supply it to the product teams via the normal GYM download site, and to supply it to the customers, the ISVs and the business partners directly via a download page on IBM DeveloperWorks. So having set the scene for what's happening and what the Java team's going to be delivering, let me hand over to Toby Corbin to talk about the utility itself and how it's used and how it works.
Thank you, John. I'd like to start on slide number 10. The first heading, we say that the JTZU is the internal name we're using for the IBM time zone update to for Java. Basically, we call the tool JTZU, Java Time Zone Update or Java Time Zone Utility. And for the rest of this presentation, I'll be referring to the tool as JTZU just for ease of use. As John has already said, the JTZU provides the means to update an IBM JRE with a new set of time zone data without having to take a new service refresh. And this was the whole goal of the tool. It works for Java 1.2.2, 131, 140, 141, 142, and 50, with the exception of 122 and 131 on Solaris and HPUX. Now, the JTZU has been designed to run in two modes of operation: a graphics mode, which is the basic operation, and a command line mode, which is an advanced operation. So moving on to slide 11, we see that the JTZU can perform the following tasks. It's able to just search and locate any JREs or SDKs on a given platform. It can patch a JRE or SDK with new time zone data at a known location. It can search and locate for JREs and SDKs and patching everything it finds. And it can also search and locate JREs and SDKs and then perform a selective patching. So we've enabled the tool to be quite configurable as to how you'd like it to run on your system. So moving on to slide 12, I'm going to start by talking about the graphical mode the tool can run in. Now, this is the default behavior. If you change no options and run the tool as it comes out of the box, this is what you'll get. Now, it's important to note the tool must be run as root user. The reason we require it to be run as root user is that we have to be sure that the tool has permissions to actually access the drives and installations of Java on your machine. If you run it as any other user, we cannot guarantee the permissions will be correct, so therefore it has to be run as root user. The tool is launched via a shell script, which is called run JTZU, and that will either be a .bat or a .sh file, depending on the architecture you're running on. Slide 13 just gives a very quick slide of what the tool will look like when you start it up in this default graphical mode. You get a very simple GUI with the option of choosing an interactive or a non-interactive mode. Now, what we've allowed here is when running in the graphical mode, we can select interactive, which is going to prompt the user to specify a location of which JRE they would like to patch, or a non-interactive mode, which will enable the tool to go off on its own, search the entire hard disk, find any IBM JRE that is applicable for patching, and will then patch it automatically. So it's kind of like a press-it-and-forget mode. It will do it all for you. So moving on to slide 14, if you were to select interactive mode on the previous slide, you would then be prompted with this page, and you simply enter the Java installation directory that you would like to patch. There's a browse button given to bring up a file dialog to aid you with finding the JRE, but this is a simple one JRE, one patch mode. moving on to slide 15. If you have selected the non-interactive mode from the opening GUI, after a few warning messages specifying that it may take a long time to run, because bear in mind that this tool is going to search the entire hard disk for a JRE, and the only way it can do that is to do a complete search, searching for some search criteria that we'll specify later on. But if you have a hard disk with terabytes of information on it, you are going to find this tool will take a long time to run. So you'll be prompted with this GUI in the non-interactive mode. The top section of the box will just show a list of any SDKs or JREs it finds on your system, and that will update as the tool runs. And then in the bottom section of the GUI, once the tool has done its search, it will then patch any applicable JREs from the top section, and you'll see the results in the bottom section. But bear in mind, this non-interactive mode really is that you press start at the beginning, and the tool could take potentially hours to run, but it will patch anything it finds. So if you have users that don't want to get involved and want to just leave it running, this is the mode to use. So moving on to chart 16, we have a command line mode. When we originally designed the JTZU, it was a graphical mode only, with a simple either patch one JRE or allow this tool to go off and find them all. The command line mode has come along as a more advanced mode to allow the user to have full configuration over what the tool is actually going to do. We have a directory search file that allows you full configuration of where the tool will search. So rather than just tell the tool to search everything, it will just search the areas you tell it. It has a discover-only mode where you can just leave the tool running in the background and it will go off and report on any found JREs but not actually patch them. And it will also have a patch-only mode, which will then perform the updates. So moving on to slide 17, how do we actually run the tool in command line mode? Well, this is not the default behavior. As I said earlier, it will default to run in the GUI mode. So to switch to command line mode, you need to modify a command line flag in the run JTZU ENV file. You set the no GUI flag equal to true. Again, this must be launched as the root user for the same reasons as earlier. And again, it's still launched using the same shell script, run JTZU. So the actual launching of the mechanism is the same in all modes. You just have to configure some command line options to toggle between the two. So slide 18. We ship it with a file called directory-search.txt. And this file controls where the tool will search for JREs. Now, it's important to note this is only applicable in command line mode. The GUI mode does not pay any attention to the command line directory-search.txt file. So specifying directory-search.txt and adding locations in there will not apply when running in the GUI. It only applies to command line mode. And the way this file works is we ship with it having a single word in, the word all, which is placed at the start of the file. And that forces the tool to search everything, which is the default behavior. This file can be manually edited, and directories can be removed from the search by adding them to the file and starting the line with a minus symbol. Now, you may decide that you don't want the hard disk to search everything, but you may want to search at a small location. So by removing the all keyword and replacing it with a specific list of directories, by adding them to the file and starting each one with a plus symbol, will force the tool to only look in the directories you specify. And if we move on to slide 19, we can see some examples of this. So in the first case, we see that there's the keyword all at the beginning, which is going to tell the tool to search the entire hard disk, but then we have a few exclusions. We have a minus C backslash temp and a minus D backslash build test cases. So the tool will search the entire hard disk except C backslash temp and D builds test cases. Now, in the second example, we don't have the keyword all. We've simply told the directory search.txt to have a plus C backslash windows, a plus C backslash program files, and a minus C program files sum. Now, what this is going to tell the tool is to only search in C windows, only search in C program files, but do not search in C program file sum. these directory locations are recursive. So if you select to search in C Windows, it will search in C Windows and everything below C Windows, which is why in the second section where I have C program files and then minus C program files sun, it will search in everything under C program files and recursively, but will not do the C program files sun directory. So moving on to slide number 20, we have what is called a discover-only mode. Now, in this mode, the tool will only search for JREs. It will not patch them. Now, the reason we have this mode is because the tool could potentially take hours to run. And when the tool is running and doing the patching, you cannot have any VMs running that are going to be patched. So if you were to run the tool for 4 hours and have the tool at the end do an automatic patch, you would potentially have to have any VMs running on your machine offline for those 4 hours. So by having a discover-only mode, we can have the tool do the lengthy search without impacting any of your machine, and then at a later date, we can do the patch. So that's what this discover-only mode is for. By setting the flag discover-only equal true in the run JTZUEMB file, it will tell the tool to go off and do a search only and report any found JREs to the sdklists.txt file. These files, by the way, are all in the root directory of where you copy the tool to when it gets downloaded from the web. So, discover-only mode will search for any found JREs using the location specified in the directory directory-search.txt file, but will not do any patching at this point. If we move on to slide 21, the patch mode, when running in this mode, the patch mode will look for the location of an sdklist.txt file, which will be the results of running it in discover-only mode, and if it finds it, it will then patch any VMs found in that file. Now, this allows system admin people to better coordinate when they want the tool to run, because by running it in discover-only mode, they now have a list of all the VMs they know need patching. They can then work out when would be the best time to bring those systems offline to run the tool to patch them. The actual patching of a VM takes seconds. It's the search that takes a long time. So we now have the ability in the tool to do the find up front and then patch at a later date when it's convenient to bring these systems offline. Now, the other important thing to notice about this sdklist.txt file is, again, it can be edited. So once the tool has run, found all the locations of the JREs and written them to this sdklist.txt file, the system admin person or whoever can review the list of found VMs, and they may decide they don't actually want to patch every single VM. So by editing this list, you can remove any VMs you don't then want the JTZ Duke to run against. The other thing to be aware of with this sdklist.txt file is the results that are put into this list will also give you, at the end of each line, the level of time zone data that the found VM is on. Okay? So moving on to slide 22, I'm going to talk now about how the actual tool works under the covers. What is it actually doing? So the search method. The tool detects JREs by looking for certain characteristics and files associated with an IBM JRE. So for 1.4 and above, we search for core.jar under a JRE lib directory. And it's important to note that core.jar does not exist under a Sun JRE. This is how we distinguish between an IBM and a Sun JRE. And for 1.3.1, we search for an rt.jar under JRE lib. But we also need to search for the addition of certain orb libraries, because under 1.3.1, Sun do have an rt.jar under JRE lib, but they do not have these IBM orb libraries. So that's how we differ between an IBM JRE and a Sun JRE, so that we don't patch a Sun JRE. Slide 23, how do we replace the files? What we're doing is we're shipping with each version of the tool a jar.executable to enable us to patch the core.jar or the rt.jar specific for that release. we will never ever replace newer files with old. So it's not possible for the tool to ship with an older version of the time zone data and actually patch a newer version that's on the system. It will it checks to make sure the level is older when it goes to do the replacements. In 131, what we're actually doing is replacing several classes with pre-compiled versions. The design of time zone data under 131 and 14 and above has changed radically. Under 131, the data was hard-coded into Java files that we compile into class files. So what we're doing here is we're pre-compiling the class files in our overnight builds, building the tool up with these class files, and then we're doing a class file replace in the jar files on the systems that we run it on. For 1.4 and above, the time zone binary files have been taken, the time zone data has been taken out of the class files in 1.4 and put into standalone binary files. And this is the information we get from the Olsen database. So for 1.4, what we do is we pre-compile the binary files in our overnight build system here, ship those with the tool, and we do a time zone binary file replace in core.jar with those shipped with the tool. Now, for the Solaris and HP hybrid builds, we replace the time zone binary files under the JRE libzi directory. They have a different format again. But again, all we're doing is doing a file replacement. We don't touch any other files to the VM, we just replace the time zone files. So slide 24. It's important to note that all changes made by the tool are backed up. At the moment, it's a manual process to revert any changes made by the tool. But this is easy enough to find out what changes have been done. Under 131, the rt.jar file is backed up under JRE lib as rt.jar_jzzu backup. For 1.4 and above, the core.jar file is backed up as core.jar_jzzu backup. And on the hybrid build, Solaris and HP, the ZI directory is backed up as jrelibzi_jzzu backup. So should, after running the tool, the time zone change no longer required, or it's decided it's been a mistake to make that change, it's a manual reversion of the tool, but the files are there as these backup files. Slide 25. Everything the tool does is logged. There is a logfile.log is created that details everything the tool does. It shows all the search paths, all detected JREs, all patched JREs, and any errors get logged to this file. And this provides support with a very good idea of what the tool has done when it's run, what it's patched, what went wrong, which we hope you should never see, but everything that goes in there is in this logfile.log. And again, that is in the root directory of where you run the tool from. Slide 26, a few items to bear in mind when the tool is running. As I mentioned earlier, when the tool is patching, all VMs to be patched must be stopped. This is so that although the tool could run against a live VM, if you were to patch a live VM, you would get the situation potentially where you had some Java objects could have taken data from old time zone information, and you could then have a new Java object to take data from the new time zone, and you get a mismatch in your system. That's why the VMs need to be stopped, the patch placed, and then the VM started again, to make sure that everything running against that VM has the new data. The machine does not need to reboot after running the tool. This is important to notice. We've been asked this one. And all we're doing is patching the VM. We're not changing any OS data, just patching the VM. However, the OS itself may require patching. There will be Windows, I believe, is releasing a service pack to replace the time zone data on the Windows OS, and I'm sure there will be other operating systems will have the same. Something to look out for is running the wrong version of the tool, i.e. a 64-bit version run against a 32-bit build. If this happens, then jar will fail. This will be the obvious message. It will be unable to execute the jar because we'll have shipped a 32-bit version of the jar or a 64-bit version of the jar, and you'll be trying to execute it with the wrong type of build. So jar will fail. And we've got here that product and support team should include the DST 2007 keyword in any DST-related PMR, APAR, and tech notes. So moving on to slide 27, we have a few known problems with Java and time zones that we've come across already. Starting at the top, the US regression with 142 SR5 when TZ names hard-coded into customer apps. This is non-related to the DST change, but is an issue that's come up. And it's to do with the EST time zone. The EST time zone has changed to be EST5 EDT if it is to specify daylight savings time. This was because EST was incorrectly specifying daylight savings time for the whole of the US. Basically, the state of Indiana does not observe DST, while the rest of the eastern part of the US does observe DST. So the time zone ID for EST, which supports this geographic area, and time zone ID EST5 EDT now refers to the rest of the eastern US that observes DST. So any application that is hard-coded a time zone is EST and wants to have daylight savings time being applied needs to change their EST hard-coded value to the EST5 EDT. Now this also applies for anyone that's hard-coded a time zone ID of MST, which is the Mountain Standard Time. That doesn't observe DST, so it would give an incorrect value. If anyone has hard-coded MST and they want daylight savings time to apply, they need to change this time zone ID to MST7 MDT. This is not related to the US time zone change, but this is stuff that you may get problems on. The next problem on there was for Java 1.3.1, the JVM must be started with year equals 2007 to pick up 2007 DST fixes. Due to the design of 1.3.1 being different to the design of 1.4 and above, although we can make the changes to 1.3.1 now to be ready for the time zone changes in 2007, the VM must be stopped and started in 2007 for itself to actually detect the change. This is due to the way that when the VM starts, it detects what the date is today and loads in time zone information relevant for the current year. So although we can put code in to say in 2007, this is what the daylight savings time will be, unless you stop and start the VM in 2007, it won't detect those changes that have taken place. And the last point to make there is the last boil is adjustment required for Brazil DST start and end dates. We need to either run the JTZU or apply the SR10 iFix, the 142 SR7 or 50 SR4 service refresh to resolve that issue. So moving on to slide 28, I'm going to pass you back to John, who will give you some information on this slide.
Okay, thanks, Toby. This really is a topic that comes in the category of frequently asked questions, and we're putting together a list of FAQs, and this is probably just to amplify the fact here that we're talking about the primary mechanism being service packs and fixed packs, and the secondary mechanism being using the time zone update utility. Now, there are really two scenarios here. First of all, for those products that are not going to make available fixed packs with DST enabling in them, obviously in that situation, JTZU is going to be the only method available to them, so they won't have a choice. Now, where there are products who are making fixed packs available, the customer will have a choice. And many factors are going to influence that choice, and you might get questioned by them for advice on that. And our approach is that the default IBM recommendation here, the safest approach rather, is to apply the product fixed packs as the normal method. It's it's a slightly unusual situation here, but if there are exceptional situations that apply to that customer that that are not going to be covered by fixed pack delivery, the products will advise their clients to run JTZU against their install systems to perform the required upgrade. And to elaborate a little bit on what that means, if you move on, please, to chart 29, we're given a few examples of situations where a customer might need to run JTZU. And one of them is that they need to be more up-to-date with time zones than the service refreshes. So the examples being Bermuda and Western Australia, for example. And if they need those changes urgently, then the time zone utility is the way of getting them. Second example is where they've fallen really way behind on service refresh levels, or the product itself hasn't shipped a recent refresh of Java. And in that situation, they just might not be prepared to take the risk of a major leap in service levels. And in that situation, then it would be a safer and probably preferable way forward to run JTZU. The third instance is really all to do with iFixes, so that the customer can have the best of both worlds and keep an individual specific iFix on their system, and at the same time have the benefits of a later time zone fix for DST enabling, for example. Situation number four is really for those releases that are not mainstream supported releases of Java, and service refreshes aren't being made available. And situation number five is kind of typical, where there's a vendor product involved and we don't really have much control of what's in the vendor product, and if that vendor product prereqs a level of Java that doesn't have fixed packs available, well, the customer needs some way of resolving it. So that's another possible alternative. And that really brings us now to the end of this presentation and description. What we've included on chart 30 is really, first of all, a user ID, an email address to which you can mail in questions that might occur to you after the Q&A session. And that also is the user ID that's being made available for products sending in any questions or problem reports, or for external customers sending in any questions or problem reports. So we're going to be monitoring that user ID very carefully during the next few weeks. And finally, on the bottom half of the slide, we've listed a number of URLs, reference websites, which are really the key to a lot of the documentation. This is where you go for amplification of things that we've talked about on this webcast today, and you look there to find out what's available to customers and see the material that they're referring to, and also additional material like the technical description of JTZU that Toby has put together. So at that point, I really need to draw to a close on the webcast and hand back now to Stephen Gilson.
Thank you, John. Toby, that was an excellent presentation. We'd like now to have a Q&A session, and Dolly, if you could help us get that off the ground. There will be a specific keystroke that you'll press in order to enter a question.
Thank you, Mr. Gilson and gentlemen. The question and answer session will be conducted electronically. If you would like to ask a question, please press the star key followed by the digit 1 on your telephone. If you are using a speakerphone, please remember to turn off your mute function before signaling for a question. Once again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then 1 now, and we'll pause for just a moment to assemble our roster. Our first question comes from Arvid Serve.
Hi, thanks for this presentation. I have two questions, if you allow me to ask. Number one, you mentioned that there is a full replacement of JRE. Like, Huxley provides full replacement of JRE on different OS, and you excluded a couple of OS like a Sun and HP. So how we can get those JRE? That is the first question. And second question, and we have a client-server architecture where we have hundreds of agents on the client side, how we can upgrade the JRE remotely using your JTGU tool?
This is John. Let me just answer on the subject of Solaris and HP. I think the limitations there are really in the domain of the 131 level of Solaris and HP that that has been embedded with IBM products on the Solaris platform. And it is a limitation that's kind of laid down on by Sun at the moment. And it's something we're actually talking to Sun about. We hope there will be some resolution because effectively it's a standalone JRE or SDK that's come from Sun. And the way our implementation works is we won't be processing those. I think the best advice here is to come to us for a little bit of guidance on how to approach this. Don't contact Sun just at the moment. We are in discussions with Sun about it. We may have a resolution. It won't be a rapid resolution. But I think from the point of view of a product, Sun's guidance is going to be very clear. If you're a middleware product that's got a 131 JRE in it, then the right thing to do is to get the latest refresh from Sun, and you get that via the IBM GIM website, and that would probably be the 131_19 level, and rebuild your product with that Sun originated JRE that you got from the IBM website. And so it's a long-winded mechanism, and it is a mechanism that's based on creating a new service refresh and a new fix pack for your product. So that's probably the preferred guidance at the moment. We simply don't have a shortcut that'll do 131 Sun JREs or HP JREs because of our agreement with Sun. Okay, let's try and move on to the second question.
This is Toby. Am I understanding that your second question was how can you use the tool to remotely update JREs to the new time zone data?
Right.
Yeah, well, basically, the tool can do this. If you're, say, talking about a network installation, then providing the machine that you're running the tool on can see the other JREs and has write permission to them, then by using the command line mode, you can edit that directory search.txt file, put into it the mount point locations or the search locations of where you want these JREs or where these JREs are, and the tool will then patch them. So providing the machine you're running the tool from can see and does have write access to the other VMs on your network, it can update them.
Okay, let me do follow-up question if you don't mind. Like you said, network mount, so does that mean we have to mount all thousands machine on a single machine and then they can do the search and replace the, how about Unix and all those things, we have to install some tools to mount all the drives?
Well, if you don't, the tool can only do a search for VMs that it can get to. So unless the machine has got mounts to other areas, then the tool won't be able to find those JREs.
Okay. Thanks both of you.
Okay.
We now move on to Andy Griffin.
Hi guys, thanks for the presentation. Very useful. Actually, the previous guy asked the question I was looking for, but we also have a lot of Sun-based products, and are Sun doing a similar type thing to this, and maybe providing utility? And the other thing is, you mentioned that 131 JRE. Is this problem also present in the Sun 142 JREs as well?
This is John. Answering the last question first, Andy, the problem is not present because we ship an IBM modified, a so-called hybrid version of the 142 and 50 JREs on Sun and HP. So it's within IBM's domain to patch that, and our utility will patch it. The problem might arise And we have had this question already to do with companies that have been acquired by IBM.
That's what I am. I come from Micromuse, and we've used the Sun Vanilla 142 JRE.
Right. So we've tuned into this. This is actively under discussion. Without dropping too many names, where you've had a product like File.net or even Informix, where that company's been acquired by IBM and it's brought with them products with a native Sun JRE.
That's exactly it.
We are currently not permitted by Sun to patch those JREs with our utility. And we really understand the problem here. In fact, I'm going to be talking to people in Sun about this in about 3 hours' time. I think the advice again, where you've had a JRE from Sun, and that's embedded in a product like Micromuse, what we'd say is it's the tortuous explanation I gave a few minutes ago. The only legitimate way of dealing with this, as it stands, is to rebuild your product with a new Sun Refresh JRE with a refresh at the right level. Having said that, I'm coming back to your very first question, and that is, are Sun doing anything similar in terms of a time zone utility? And the answer is yes. We can't imagine where they got the idea from, however, but somewhat late in the day, they actually have made available an update utility which is not quite as functionally rich as ours, having listened to the multiple facilities and customization that can be done that Toby described a few minutes ago. Sun will be the first to admit that their deliverable is a very rough and ready and simple tool. They haven't actually gone public and said it's ready for prime time. It is in beta-only mode at the moment, but nevertheless it does exist, and we are working with them to try and make it available through methods that products like yourselves will be able to take advantage of, and possibly even customers of products like yourselves will be able to take advantage of. But we are still very much in negotiation mode on that, and probably those negotiations are still a bit confidential, so not to go too widely with it.
So just reading between the lines, it sounds like there may be IBM can point the finger at Sun and say to customers, well, Sun have got a utility, you need to update your JRE using Sun's utility, and IBM won't have to do anything.
In theory, we could do that. It's not very professional from a product ownership perspective in IBM. That's the only qualification that we'd say.
We probably just need to be able to say to the customer that we certify that the products will still work following an update.
Yeah, that's probably one way of approaching it.
And sorry to go on. What about HP? Same sort of discussions?
We expect HP to follow suit with exactly what we agree with Sun. Those discussions are still in progress, I'm afraid, not resolved yet.
Okay, thanks very much for this very useful call.
Okay.
Our next question comes from Bill Hetrich.
Actually, I got the answer for my question. Thank you very much.
So we'll move on to Daniel Como.
Yes, I just wanted to clarify. In the discovery mode, will it also identify whether that JRE has already been patched or not?
What it will do is it will, in the SDK list.txt that it presents at the end, it will give you a list of all the time zone data, the time zone values that are currently in there. Now, if you're patching with, say, 2006N, and you notice in this list it already says 2006N, it won't repatch, it will just ignore it. But you will be able to see the level of all your current VMs in that file.
Okay, and I guess in the search and replace mode or whatever, you mentioned that it's going to detect that it's already been patched and it's not going to affect anything. So theoretically, you don't need to stop the JRE if it's already been patched, even if you're doing sort of a global search and replace to patch any new JREs that may have come onto the system. Or
that is correct. If it doesn't need updating, then you can leave the VM running. The time zone tool will just detect that the value is okay, and we'll just leave it alone.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Our next question comes from Jim Maddle.
I was just wondering how this would affect some of the Domino or Note JREs that are sort of customized, not really the out of the box JREs that are loaded on. You know, if you just loaded the standard JREs out of Hursley, would they be affected any differently than those standard ones?
Yeah, I can't really give an authoritative answer here because you'd really need to talk to the developers or the product owners of Notes and Domino, but we do know something about their directory structure given the fact it's quite customized, and we certainly know that the directory does contain time zone tables. So in terms of JTZU doing the patching, then I think we can say quite confidently that it will work with a Lotus Notes or Domino provided JRER SDK, in spite of it being slightly customized. I know we have had that raised by some of the consumers of JTZU, and we've made especially sure that it will cater for that particular directory structure.
Right, because it didn't seem like it was doing much but modifying the class files. And I'm not sure if they were customized at all. Okay.
And let's move on and take a question from Steve Francisco.
Hi. I had a question about whether there was a way to roll back the change once it's been applied. One of the requirements for our fixes is that the customers are able to roll them back if there's an issue with it.
The only way of rolling back is to manually do a replace using the backup files that get created. We don't have an automatic rollback facility. Any changes are backed up. Slide 24 gives you the details of how the stuff gets backed up, but it will be a manual process to revert the changes made by the tool. But by using the logfile.log that we use, you can see in there which actual VMs were modified anyway. So by using a combination of that log file and the backup files created, you can manually replace at the moment.
Thanks. And one other question. Looking at the batch file itself, it looks like the tool itself is requiring or using a JRE, which means the JRE that's being used cannot patch itself. Is that correct?
Yes, it can patch itself. It does patch itself. So you're not the VM that you're running against will be patching itself. The way the file locking takes place means that it doesn't actually lock out the core.jar and prevent it running. So it will detect itself and patch itself.
Okay, and one last question. Is it possible to run completely headless with no user interaction at all? Meaning, if I know exactly where the directory is, where my Java that needs an update is, can I run this as a utility that the customer doesn't even realize is running?
Yes, you could. You could modify the directory search.txt file to put in there the location of your VM. You could set the no GUI equals true flag and also set the discover mode equals false. And therefore, the tool will straight away start up without a GUI. It will try and patch whatever's in that discovery directory search.txt file, and the SDK.list file. And yes, it will work in that method. So let me start again. The SDK.list is the file that is used by the no GUI mode to patch any found VMs. So if you edit the SDK.list file, put in there the exact location of your VM, and then run the tool with the no GUI equals true and discover only equals false, it will go straight to the SDK.list and patch what's in there without putting up a GUI.
Thank you.
Okay.
Yep.
Thank you. Moving on to a question from Asha Mishra.
Yeah, hi. I have two questions. One thing I want to know is the products, if they are using mixed JDKs. For example, two products interacting, one using IBM JDK and one Sun JDK. And if we just patch one JDK, what are the consequences? And my second question is that why recommending applying six-pack as the preferred way. When using the two, we only replace one or two classes. So, because applying six-pack is a big, major change. Okay.
Okay, so if you look at number one, the IBM, if you have a product using an IBM VM and a Sun VM, well, the problem will be is if you run the tool and you correctly update the IBM VM with the latest time zone data, but you don't have the Sun VM updated, then you may have the situation where the two different VMs are going to give you different times. So they will become out of sync if the Sun VM is not updated as well.
So do we have a strategy, like should we be telling customers, and if they upgrade one, then, and if they are using other JVMs, then they should look into Sun tooling, or what is the strategy for that?
Well, yes, I guess the IBM one will need to be updated if you're working in a time zone that could be affected by these daylight savings time changes, then the IBM one has to be updated, and yes, the Sun one has to be updated as well. But so I guess the tooling from Sun will be the way forward to update the Sun VM.
Okay, thank you.
Well, I'll try and take the second part of the question. Can you just repeat that second part again, please?
The second question was I saw in your presentation saying that we prefer that customers apply fixed pack where available and applicable. However, we say that, you know, when we use the JTSU manual tool, that it only replaces one class. So why is applying six-pack a preferred way?
Yeah. I think this is a subject of some discussion and debate. And one of the reasons why we're adopting that approach is because a number of customers, particularly enterprise customers, are a bit suspicious of using a utility that patches things rather than having the normal IBM service mechanism for applying PTFs and doing upgrades in a very controlled and auditable way. We certainly know of certain customers with mainframe environments, especially where this mechanism is very important to them in terms of internal auditability and change control within their organizations. And so they would see it as a very non-standard way of going about things to run a utility. Having said that, what we're offering here is much more akin to IFIX patching or emergency service where a fix or a patch has to be applied at short notice to fix maybe a problem with a production system. So I think the background is like coming at it with the view that, here we are applying preventive maintenance. We ought to be doing that kind of change in a control environment through standard service mechanisms. And that's, that also makes sense sometimes from an IBM service point of view as well as a customer's point of view. But having talked to other customers, they would regard not having a utility and being forced to use fixed packs as quite an archaic mechanism. I'm just quoting from one customer we were in touch with recently for doing this kind of time zone table patching. So we're really dealing with all points on the spectrum in terms of the customer view of this. But our approach in the past, when there have been pervasive changes that need fixes to Java and fixes to products that invent Java, the approach has always been we will do this via service refreshes or iFixed versions of service refreshes. Now, we're kind of making a break with tradition here. It is quite an innovative approach. And although we're very confident that the tool itself will function in a trouble-free way, I think we'd say there are probably scenarios that customers might encounter that we haven't really considered yet. So that's the reason for positioning the fixed packs and the service refreshes as the preferred mechanism for doing the upgrades.
That's very good. Thank you for that explanation. The only thing I would suggest is that the one according like my previous question, if you add something about some recommendations for mixed JDKs. I mean, we said we don't cover Sun and HP and all that, but I think customers have that, and it'll be nice from support point of view to have a direction from the JDK team.
Yeah, I think, to be honest, if they've got their JDK standalone from Sun or HP and not part of an IBM product or even an IBM acquired product, our answer has got to be go to Sun or HP for your resolution.
Okay, thank you.
Next question comes from John Dale.
You've answered my question. Thank you very much.
Mr. Dale?
You've answered my question.
Thank you. We will now move on to Sean White.
Hi. I just had one question. Would this pre-detection be available to customers even as a form or as a webcast?
For customers, we haven't gone there yet. Maybe Stephen's got some thoughts on that.
We haven't made plans to make this available to customers in its present form, though we are releasing quite a lot of information that's in the slides in the form of tech notes, flash documents, as well as an FAQ file that, in fact, I published just a little while ago.
Okay.
And we'll be updating that information as we go. And in fact, the questions that you folks are asking now are going to be good material for the FAQ.
Also, too, would it be even possible, I don't know if it's too late or not, but could you also add it to the Education Assistant, the IEA tool, or at least give that some thought as well?
I will definitely add that to my list of things to follow through on. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
And our final question comes as a follow-up from Jim Maddle.
You made a statement earlier that you were still in discussions with Sun about regarding the time zones and how we can modify their JREs that are part of our products that, by companies that were purchased by IBM. Is there any chance that outcome will cause a change to this tool?
We would have to brainstorm a little bit whether the solution might be through Sun's time zone utility or through ours, but Toby's shaking his head. From a technical point of view, we don't think there'd be any need to change. I think from a technical point of view, that the function's already there. But we probably should be a bit cautious about 131, but 131 we're okay with.
Potentially, again, it's perfectly feasible.
Good. All right. So I think that answers the question, but it doesn't really give you an outlook for when we might have reached some accommodation with Sun in this area that's currently under negotiation. So it is a bit sensitive, but it is valuable to have groups like yourselves making the point, because it gives us some, leverage over Sun in saying this is quite a widespread requirement.
Okay, so with that, the tool will be able to out of the box modify those if Sun gives the go-ahead to do that?
We'd rather not answer that question. It's a hypothetical situation, and we're very keen to tread carefully with our relationship with Sun.
Understand. Okay.
We have a question from Ali Adler.
Yes, hi. I have two questions or maybe points to mention. Just going back, maybe this is for Toby, regarding the JTZU utility, the way I understood it running, is there a possibility that you could stop the utility midstream? In other words, do you take checkpoints? Because I can see a scenario where a customer is maybe running this update at 8 o'clock at night, and then the utility runs for 2 hours, and he says, man, this is taking for so long, and he cancels it or something midstream, then he has to do it all over again?
Yes, it's a short answer to that. If he's running it in the GUI mode, the graphics mode, and he's running in a non-interactive, then yes. If he stops it because it's taking too long, he will then have to restart it. However, if you run it in the more advanced mode, the command line mode, when it's actually doing the directory search, you can leave that going for whenever. You get visible updates to the screen. You see the directories that are being searched. You know the tool's not frozen. So you can leave that running without any impact to your system performance-wise, or I say any, very, very minimal. You're just doing hard disk searching. And then that would be the preferred method to go if it's a big disk to search. But certainly if you're in any of the modes, if you run them and interrupt them midway through, you will have to start again.
So if you do the manual mode, do you have to keep track of where it stopped?
Well, no. If you run the manual mode and just leave it in the discover only mode, once it's finished running, it will give you a complete list.
I'm talking about a scenario where you stop it midstream.
If you stop it midstream, you will have to start again.
Well, that's the point I'm trying to make. So in either case, you're going to have to do that.
Yes, in both cases you have to do that. But in the second mode, the command line mode, it's more obvious that the tool has not hung, because you're seeing responses to the screen as the directories it's searching. Whereas in the non-interactive mode, it may be easier to think that the machine has frozen when in fact it hasn't.
Right, I understand. I'm talking about a case, for example, maybe the customer has more than one JDK or something, and it's just taking forever, and then he says, I'm going home, and he breaks free in the middle, and next day he's going to do it all over again.
Yes, they will have to do. But then you could, if that was the case, you could configure the tool to restrict the number of drives it searches at any one time, but at the moment, the tool will have to be restarted from scratch if you break it midway through running.
Is there any possibility that this will change?
Well, we will certainly take the idea forward to review and see what the outcome is of that. But at the moment, we haven't got the plans for that. But then you've only just mentioned the idea, so we will certainly take that forward and review it.
Okay.
We'll take a question from Tamika Watts.
Hi. I'm still unclear on whether the J2ZU utility will update or repackage Sun and HP JDKs, like, for example, on Webster application server. I'm still not clear on that.
The answer is, if it's an IBM modified version, in other words, the kind that comes with Java 1.4.2 or 5.0, the answer is yes, it will patch them. If not an IBM modified version, in other words, it's the one that comes with Java 1.3.1, it will not. And we are working with WebSphere on that very topic. But the net of it is, basically, if it's not an IBM modified one, we're not permitted to patch it. Not at the moment, anyway.
Okay, and you said you are working with them, so it's not clear as to whether it is.
It won't be a rapid resolution, but we are working with Sun on that.
Okay, thank you.
We have a follow-up question from Isha Mishra.
Yes. Hi, I just wanted to check if there is a notes-based database with all your FAQs and presentation, or is it just on the Hertzley website that we can look for updated information?
Yeah, this is John. I'm keen to keep a complete set of reference material in one place or accessible in one place, in so much as it applies to Java and might be needed by products including Java. I'm trying to build that up, and obviously there's material that we've talked about today, and there will be an FAQ coming into existence based on these Q&As, and I'm sure that will be referenced from the intranet site, but I'll probably also make sure there's a link to it on the chain of links that is currently the Java-owned table of URLs, and that's one of those that's listed on page 30. Of the foil set.
Thank you very much.
We have a question from George Horton.
Yes, good afternoon to you. When is this time zone update utility, the JTZU utility tool, going to be made GA available? Is it GA available at the moment? Or
Good question. It's officially available in early adopters mode at the moment.
Right, okay.
It currently is robust. We're happy that it's had adequate testing to release to customers, and in fact customers can get to it now via various pathways through the product flashes and tech notes. When they get to it, there is a health warning on the page that says this is still in early adopters mode, and the reason that it has that health warning is that we're not really able to provide 24/7 support cover for it with an email to a task ID. What we are able to do is respond through Q&As and messages coming to that ID. But in terms of the normal support channels that go with IBM products, until this round of education is completed, we can't really declare it GA. But as soon as these webcasts have been created and disseminated and the brands declare they're sufficiently educated in terms of product support education, then we can move to declaring it GA. It's not a technical limitation that's preventing us from getting there.
Sure.
We do have one or two bits of function still to add, but it really is the tail end. It's more are the support teams geared up and sufficiently educated to be able to start handling problems through level 2 and so on via this mechanism.
Okay, thank you.
And we have no further questions in our queue at this time. Mr. Gilson, I'd like to turn the conference back over to you for additional or closing remarks.
I'd just like to thank everyone for their time on the call, and I'd like to thank both John Stainforth and Toby Corbin for their time developing and presenting this material. So thank you, everyone, and good day.
And again, that does conclude today's conference call. Thank you for your participation. Have a great day.